Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
You're listening to Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. How do you learn about the early history of jazz? Well, one way is to go buy a classic record like this one, Louis Armstrong's Hot Five Ensemble, recorded in 1925. Another way is to attend a concert at Jazz at Lincoln Center. Under the artistic direction of Wynton Marsalis, the institution has made jazz history and education a core mandate, though not without some controversy. This Thursday through Saturday at Rose Hall, Marsalis will lead a group drawn from the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra that will reimagine the Armstrong classic Hot Five recordings. And Wynton joins us from Jazz at Lincoln Center on Soundcheck this afternoon. Well, Wynton, welcome back to the show.
All right, it's a pleasure to be back.
Many people remember Louis Armstrong as, you know, the smiling entertainer who sang What a Wonderful World. You're interested in a much earlier and perhaps more innovative part of his career. What in particular inspired this concert and looking at this particular group?
Well, it's just the Hot Five and the Seven recordings are the foundation of the organization of jazz improvisation, even as we know it today. And the music, there are many things implied in the arrangements. They were recorded between kind of 1925 and 1928. And as a matter of fact, we just came from rehearsing a piece which is called Once in a While, and the rhythm, don't, 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 that we just heard on Rodrigo and Gabriela's version of Metallica's Orion is the exact same rhythm that Louis Armstrong and them play at the end of Once in a While. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two. So there are a lot of connections between his music and his conceptions and music that we hear all over the world.
Wow, so all these things that that are sort of part of the musical landscape today, you can look back to this one relatively brief period and this small group of musicians and say, a lot of that stuff started here.
Well, we don't know so much that it started there, but they were the first to document it on record with its full power and the glory of it.
Right.
And we don't try to recreate the record. You know, that's really impossible. Without Louis Armstrong, you could never recreate that. We believe that these conceptions are still modern, and we don't, at Jazz Lincoln Center, we've never tried to recreate any records or be a repertory band or any of these things. Everything is to be considered in the present and pertinent and modern and powerful today.
So, in fact, if you were to stand there and try and recreate note for note Louis Armstrong's solos, you would actually be doing a disservice to the spirit in which those solos were created in the first place.
Right. He loved King Oliver, and he played solos that were sometimes note for note verbatim versions of what King Oliver played. But he always put another thing in it that was Louis Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And at the distance of 70 or so years, 80 something year distance that we have a lot of techniques, and the music evolved in different ways. In many ways, there are still very innovative concepts in that early music that have never been equaled. So we really believe that all of our music is current. Now, it's like language, or it's like clothing or anything. You just pick up things as you go along. You don't have to discard things of value just because they existed in an earlier time.
Right. Now, Louis Armstrong, like you, you know, was a trumpeter from New Orleans who moved to New York, became kind of a cultural icon. You never met him, right? But do you identify with him?
Well, all jazz musicians who have any level of knowledge about the music identify with him, because he, and really all really educated kind of American people about our culture, can identify with him because he was such an individual, and he was so powerful in that he was himself in public.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't feel like he had to act any kind of prescribed way. And he also was himself when he played. So he's influenced all of us, in jazz. But no one can really be compared to him.
Right.
He's a kind of genius with he grew up in complete poverty. His mother was a prostitute for a short period of time. He worked on a cold court. He was sent to a boy's home. He walked around with no shoes on his feet. He came up, and everywhere he went after he left New Orleans, people sent for him, and he excited people all over the world. They would shut down train stations and airports. He was just a man whose spirit was so large, and he laid such a blessing on the world that no one could ever really be compared to him.
Well, the jazz critic Murray Horowitz called the opening trumpet solo on Louis Armstrong's West End Blues, quote, the most important 15 seconds in all of American music, unquote.
Well, I'd have to agree with that just because of the originality of it, the power of it, and the declarative nature. It's like we believe these things, like the beginning of the preamble to the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just...
This is a statement that this is Louis Armstrong saying, I hold this truth to be self-evident.
Right, self-evident truth. That's right.
All right.
Right.
Let's hear a little bit. The trumpet solo that opens Louis Armstrong's classic recording of the West End Blues from 1928. West End Blues from Louis Armstrong. Wynton Marsalis, what is it that's so... Is there anything in that opening that is completely unlike what came before? I mean, was it really the first time that somebody started a song with a trumpet solo with that kind of complexity and precision?
That is the first time in jazz that happened, but... It's the all the worlds that come together in that solo. First, trumpet players, we've always played fanfares. You can go back even to the Baroque era with Handel's Messiah, and the trumpet is tippy tippy dum pom pom. We have a kind of fanfare type of things to play. He combines the tippy beep boop boop beep 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 beep. Combines the fanfare with the blues. Boo doo bee dee 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 doo boo doo dee boo. Then he goes a third above the time. Do boo boo beep boo do beep boo do beep boo do beep boo boop beep. He hits this high D with such clarity and heroism and just the feeling in every note. Then he comes down and it's really chromatic. Dee boo beep boo dee boo dee boo do beep boo dee 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 boo. It's all kind of chromatic notes in it. And then all of a sudden, what? Do boo boo dee, just the blues.
Right.
And the kind of, if we can get past the sound of the recording and get past the kind of old-fashioned vibrato and all the things that keep us from hearing the heart of what musicians of this era were playing, and we can just hear the depth of his sound and feeling. There are a lot of worlds combining, very sophisticated, complicated things, very simple, folk, homey type of things. Louis Armstrong was a man that had many worlds poured into him.
Right. And, while we remember the voice, I mean, all jazz fans certainly remember the trumpet playing as well. Would you say that the general sort of consensus that he's the guy who created the coherent, the organized solo, would you agree with that statement?
There's no question about that. The musicians of his time said that. That he was it's like when we went in kind of human consciousness. It's like we made a leap from grunts and moans and stuff like that to saying, give me that pot over there. it was a big leap. People just played little breaks and fills and embellishments on songs. And here's Louis Armstrong telling us that we can improvise solos that are coherent, that make sense. We can make up musical statements that go through a harmonic progression. And keep in mind that he's creating these solos over all types of material. The right. American popular song, marches, hymns, spirituals. He plays such a wide variety of music with different types of harmonies and progressions that people couldn't imagine making up something new. He would make up new melodic material that sounded better than what was originally written.
And the Potato Head Blues, a good example of how Louis Armstrong, sort of created this form. I mean, the solo as a form, as something that has an organization and a structure. Pretty remarkable achievement for a guy working in the 1920s. Here's a little bit from Louis Armstrong's Potato Head Blues. That's a remarkable solo from Louis Armstrong and the Potato Head Blues, and my guest Wynton Marsalis singing along with the with the trumpet part
I
there.
I got to do it.
Wynton, among the many other things that you do at Jazz at Lincoln Center, I mean, you do have this important role for education, for bringing, you know, jazz history to people. How do you do that and avoid the sit up straight and eat your vegetables approach?
Well, my father was a teacher, and he didn't teach that way. I'm from New Orleans, and nobody I knew taught that way. Our teaching is very natural and plain, and we're very plain-spoken and natural. It's like, just like what we just heard Louis Armstrong play. He's playing all kind of complicated major seven notes against flat sevens and stuff that if you're a musician, you would know the sophistication of it. But it sounds very melodic and plain. Like, he's not trying to audition. He's not trying to fill out a grant application. He's just trying to play some music to make people happy. And kids take naturally to being taught. That's you and I did it. We all listen. It's not teaching is not a form to exert power. It's a form to welcome kids into the joy of knowledge and to a more wholesome understanding of how we're all connected in on earth and the joys of history and the joys of knowing about things. So I've always been an educator. Even when I was in high school, I taught kids in elementary school, and I don't give it to them like castor oil. It's just very plain.
No, it's not very plain. You're out there, you're singing and
dance,
bopping around.
Teach,
yeah,
right? Make analogies. This is just like something you know about in everyday life. It seems complicated, but it's not. It's really something that you know. And our kids want to be empowered like everyone else. You know, I'm not one of these kind of people that's always, well, the younger generation is worse and all this. No, you know, it's our job to bring them into the world and to raise their horizon of aspiration and expectation.
Now, is it just kids? I mean, you know, these concerts are for alleged grown-ups. I mean, there's still a lot of education to be done.
These concerts are not educational events. They're entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So we make a big difference between audience don't come to my concerts. I'm not trying to educate them. I'm trying to entertain them with music. I want them to come, and if they learn some things about Louis Armstrong, they want to get his records or get some books, great. But in a 2-hour concert, we don't have the time to educate. You know, I mean, tell a little funny story or something between songs. But I'm mainly trying to play something that will make them feel good and something that they will enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, to my way of thinking, that is educating. That's educating in one of the most effective ways you can do it. You have an enthusiasm, and you're spreading that around.
Well, I'm with you in that, to that end.
All right. Wynton Marsalis is my guest on Soundcheck, the trumpeter and artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center. Thursday through Saturday, these concerts are celebrating the Louis Armstrong Hot 5 recordings at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater. Details are on our website, wnyc.org. In the Gut Bucket Blues, you actually hear Louis Armstrong sort of calling out to the different band members as they solo, which really points out the fact that as great as he was, this band had some other really top-shelf musicians in it.
Right. Well, that's the democratic proposition, you know.
Mm-hmm. Here's Louis Armstrong and the Gut Bucket Blues.
Oh, pick that piano, yeah. Oh, blow it, kid, or blow it, kid. You know, you really can blow that thing, boy. morning, Mr. Johnny Dodge. Oh, tune that piano, boy.
The Gut Bucket Blues with Louis Armstrong naming the band members and calling on them to take pretty brief and to-the-point solos. Wynton Marsalis is my guest on Soundcheck. Your Louis Armstrong program, Thursday through Saturday, is part of this year's theme, Innovations in Jazz. Some critics have said that jazz at Lincoln Center has sort of slighted the more innovative artists in jazz in recent years. Is this kind of a reaction to that?
Not at all. I don't really take the jazz critics seriously. They haven't really come up with a body of work that would merit them being taken seriously, most of them. And in terms of people who imitate kind of the turn of the century European inventions that came in 1911, 1912, I don't consider that to be innovative in jazz. You know, we have a lot of innovators, and our program is not shaped by critics. It's shaped more by our fans and people who come to participate in the music. A critic generally has to have something to say that appears to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
Many times it's not learned, just to put that fact out there.
So,
but our thing is more, Jazz Lincoln Center is more community-based and about people coming and having a good time. You know, if people haven't been down to the House of Swing on 59th Street, come participate in it. Because like Louis Armstrong was calling the names of the musicians out, we would like to develop an audience that has that type of feeling about the music, that they know the band and they want to participate, and that it takes on more more of the communal kind of feeling that's in the best of all American music.
So do you think, I mean, you know, the idea that the jazz critics in this country don't have a kind of body of work to give them the credibility, or most of them, as you say, is it different, say, in Europe? I mean, are there...
Yes.
Is it?
It's different in classical music in America. Like writers like Charles Rosen. I mean, we don't have those kind of people really in jazz.
Hmm.
Well, we don't have that level of scholarship and seriousness. You can get 30 books. You could just start naming them, you know, from even people who are not musicians, like books on Richard Wagner, like the Tristan Card and Aspects of Wagner, or the Bach Reader, or you could name book after book on great European figures. Of course, they've had more time to assess that music. But the level of scholarship, and I don't just mean technical musical scholarship, just of insight into the profound nature of that music's effect on the culture that it comes from. The observations are on a much, much higher level than much of what we have in jazz. Now, we do have some writers in jazz who write excellent books. Alfred Appel Jr. came out with a great book, Aspects of Jazz and Modernism, I think from Picasso, James Joyce, and some other figures. I don't know the exact title. Paul Berliner's book about listening to jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And we have several books that are coming out. The younger writers, I think, are exhibiting a much higher level of scholarship and seriousness. But just the general kind of my opinion about jazz is this. It doesn't even merit like an angry response or anything. You can't. You're almost stupefied by a lot of it.
Wynton Marsalis is my guest. The New York Times front page Arts and Leisure article recently raised an old but still relevant question, which is, you know, what would jazz at Lincoln Center do without you? I mean, you know, you're at the helm there, sort of the guiding light behind that organization. I know you're obviously still a young man, but, you know, do you think about jazz at Lincoln Center after you've gone on to something else?
Well, jazz at Lincoln Center, we put on so many concerts that don't involve me. We have so many we have 26 education programs, of which out of those 26 programs, I do about 5 of them. Five days, not 5 programs. I do 5 days a year.
Hmm.
Now we book many artists. We have a full-time club that runs all the time. We have a Singers Over Manhattan series that runs in the Allen Room. We have a whole building. We have all kinds of programming, and you know, this kind of
all right, so
what
you're
they do without me, you know.
You're just sitting around in bunny slippers eating bonbons then. Is that what we're supposed to? No, I didn't think so.
No, I mean, I'm working, but we're all working together. And it's a team effort. And when I go on to something else, there will be someone else to come in, and there will be other directions. And this is how institutions continue to grow.
Well, this Thursday through Saturday at the Rose Hall, Wynton Marsalis will lead a group of musicians from the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra that will sort of recast and reimagine the Louis Armstrong Hot Five recordings of the 1920s. Details on the soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. Wynton Marsalis, always a pleasure to speak to you, Wynton. Thanks for being here today.
Hey, John. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.